The next presenter is Dr. Tom Brolsema. Tom is one of my colleagues. He has just recently become the Phosphorus Program Director for the International Plant Nutrition Institute after serving the Institute since 1994 in other capacities as the Eastern Canada and Northeastern U.S. Director. He's played key roles in developing our 4R nutrient stewardship education principles within the Institute, and he's co-edited IPNI's 4R Plant Nutrition Manual. Tom, look forward to your comments.
Thank you very much, Cliff. I almost half expected that you were going to make something more of this north-south distinction, but I'm glad to see that's dissolving. So I'm from Canada, but happy to be here with my friends in the U.S. as well. I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors here, Paul Fixon, Rob Norton, Cliff Snyder, have all contributed to the content of this presentation. You'll see it's influenced by a lot of people along the way as well. Rob Norton showed this slide as well. I work for the International Plant Nutrition Institute, supported by these member companies. Our mission is all about education and science supporting responsible nutrient management. I'm going to use this slide as a little bit of an outline for my talk. Laura presented this as a beginning, and this is something that represents work that we're doing among the industry. And the way we've divided up the task is we've let TFI take the left-hand side there, and with IPNI focusing on the outcome indicators. And I'm really going to focus here on number one, taking that 4R sustainability diagram that we've always worked with and blowing it up a little bit to show the complexity, because it's very easy to say that, you know, let's apply the right source at the right rate, the right time, the right place, and we'll define right as being sustainable, but there are a lot of steps that go in between right and sustainable there. And then what I'd like to do is go through a list of outcome metrics that I'm proposing. And this is not proposed at all as a replacement for what Allison was showing, because we hope to engage Field to Market and many other sustainability organizations with the principles that I'm presenting here. We don't propose to replace them. What this is being proposed for is that from our perspective, which is a very nutrient-centric type of perspective on agriculture, these are the areas where crop nutrition has a sustainability impact, and until we begin addressing all of them in a balanced fashion, we aren't going to make progress. If we put too much emphasis on just the environmental part, we'll never be good enough. What Sonny Ramaswamy was trying to get across, I think, in the plenary session Sunday night, was that we as scientists have to be oriented to the need to communicate accurately to the public. And that means getting down to the level of what they can understand and putting out messages that are perhaps not as precise, perhaps not as complex as we would like to do, but at the same time give an accurate perception of what agriculture is doing. So as by way of explanation, I guess, the actions part of this diagram is very important. And what we see a need there for, or an opportunity, is that we as an industry, internally, we know a lot about what's going on in terms of source, rate, time, and place of nutrient application. And I know from the modeling community perspective, they're often lacking that information, what's going down on the ground. They're often, and the models are what we need to predict a lot of these outcomes here, especially some of the higher level ones. Better go through and explain now this list of 9 outcome indicators. And I'm putting the first 3 as the ones that are most closely related to the farm level. And I'm putting the 3 together because overemphasis on any one of them will lead us into trouble. Farmland productivity, soil health, and nutrient use efficiency. We consider them together, and I'm going to go into some more detail on them. When we move a little bit further away from the farm, then we get some of the environmental impacts. Water quality, air quality, greenhouse gases. We know that crop nutrition has direct impacts on those. And then we move a little further away yet, and I'm going to define these last 3, number 7, 8, and 9, as social impact indicators. Food and nutrition security, important to human well-being. Biodiversity. Human well-being depends on the biodiversity of the planet. We can't damage it. Economic value, and by this I mean something that goes deeper than just cash profit to the farmer. It's the upstream and downstream economic spin-off values as well. So this is also marked draft. This isn't necessarily an industry position. This is our developing ideas that we're sharing among the industry, and we're using this as a basis to engage the whole concept of sustainability. To blow it up a little bit more and make it a little more complex, we have always shown that the four R's are in the context of a cropping system. And we kept it simple by just showing a few pictures of crops. But what's involved there is a lot of other management practices as well. Management practices for crops, for pest management, from soil and water conservation practices. And what a coincidence. They're all covered by the American Society of Agronomy's Certified Crop Advisor Program. So we really see nutrient management in the context of a full crop management program that takes into account practices on the field, practices at the edge of field, and even practices downstream that capture nutrients. They all have to be working together if we're going to achieve any one of these nine performance metrics. Farmland productivity, crop yield. You can do the best four R's that you want, but if you've chosen the wrong variety, if you've chosen the wrong pest control, you will not achieve high yields, you will not achieve high nutrient use efficiency, and you may be detrimental to soil health as well. So, what's important to recognize here is that the outcomes of our nutrient stewardship are influenced by crop and pest management, by soil and water conservation practices, in the context of changing weather and climate. And these are all factors that we need to be addressing. The Certified Crop Advisor Program is developing specialty areas on the four R's and specialty areas on sustainability as well. And both of these, I think, are important components in developing the skill sets that are necessary to help us better communicate, better document, better verify for the public the impact of our nutrient management practices and their connection to improved sustainability. What's important is that we have alignment on the performance objectives that we're working towards. We, as an industry, can put out these nine and say, okay, they're all important to us because we see them as being connected. At some point, we also need stakeholder input as to which are the most important, which are the ones that you have to focus on. And we as scientists are not the ones to decide. Farmers are not necessarily the only ones to decide, but it's the net input of all stakeholders that comes in on that. And then we put it into an adaptive management system on the farm. And adaptive management can apply to the four R's. It can apply to all practices used on the farm as well. There's a decision cycle. It's in the crop management in North America, it's mostly an annual decision cycle, so it's important for our metrics to be available on at least an annual basis so that we can evaluate each year the impact of our choices, and they also need to be scalable so that what's done on the farm level can be scaled up and we can calculate impacts that are on a higher level as well. Our efforts towards defining these outcome areas are informed as well by the global reporting standards. There's an organization called the Global Reporting Initiatives. It's our member companies and their sustainability reporting initiatives that have basically led us to using some of the principles or extracting some of the principles. These are developed really for the corporate world, for an individual corporation. What we're trying to do is apply this to a very diverse industry that includes manufacturers, wholesalers, distributors, agri-retailers, farmers, and we're all really in this together. So we use some of these principles. Some of the important ones are ensuring that we correctly define our metrics, that we pay attention to the data interval. We also focus on the concept of materiality. And I think I've already explained that one. The metrics that we have need to be material, material to our industry and material to our stakeholders as well. That means they need to be important. If it's not important to our stakeholders, there's no importance in reporting those. So I want to get a little bit more into detail on the economic three: farmland productivity, soil health, and nutrient use efficiency. These are convenient to use at the crop advisor's level because they're measurable at the farm scale, at the field scale. They're more closely related to the 4R practices than the remaining six, but they are influenced by other agronomic practices as well. They're independent, but they're interrelated, because optimum nutrient use efficiency, where we have a balance of inputs and outputs, is often what's needed to maintain soil health. If your nutrient use efficiency is too high, you may be mining from the soil. If it's too low, you may be accumulating imbalances and surpluses of nutrients that you don't want to see. Soil health is also essential for productivity, so they're somewhat interrelated, but no one completely replaces the other as a metric of sustainability. Look at farmland productivity. It's directly, but not solely, impacted by nutrient stewardship. It supports food security, fiber, and fuel production as well. It spares land for nature, so it's linked to some of the higher order metrics as well. It is linked to plant productivity that connects to soil health and carbon storage. Yield per unit area of cropland per year is the main unit that we use to quantify it, but quality can be important too. We can be producing a lot more higher corn yields, but there's evidence as well that the corn protein content is going down. We're getting better at producing starch. We may not necessarily be getting better at producing food. The data sources we use, USDA NAS, in Canada we have statistical databases as well. It's not too hard to document increasing trends in yields, and I'm sure most of the people in this room are familiar with them. We can start looking at innovative ways of measuring productivity, and this is an interesting one from a recent paper on nutrient use efficiency by La Saleta et al. And they quantify the productivity in terms of the kilograms of nitrogen that are harvested from a hectare per each year. And they did this for cross-country comparisons around the world and then plotted the trajectory. The red dots here start at 1961 and it goes up to 2009. And you can see as we've gone through the years, there's been a steady increasing trend in crop nitrogen removal and an increasing trend in nutrient inputs. But you can see those dots are converging towards that one-to-one line where the nutrient output and nutrient input are the same, so we're improving nutrient use efficiency and yield at the same time, productivity at the same time. So I love this as a productivity indicator because you can combine it with nutrient use efficiency. The latest numbers show that in USA, as an aggregate for agriculture, we're removing 63% of as much nitrogen as is being applied to the field in the form of manure, fertilizers, and nitrogen fixation as well. Not as bad as some of the more complex recovery efficiencies and things that people can calculate, which get confusing to the general public, but it also shows that there's plenty of room for improvement, being at only 63% right now. There's lots more I could say about those kind of indicators, but I'm only trying to give one example of each. Soil health, to me, relates to physical, chemical, and biological conditions in the soil. I think the USDA NRCS has a definition of soil health that we can live with. Capacity of the soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plants, animals, and humans. That certainly fits in with sustainability quite well. Stewardship, nutrient stewardship, of course, replenishes and maintains soil fertility. That's very important. This relates to nutrient balance. It relates to farmland productivity as well for interrelations among metrics. Data sources, physical. Physical soil structure. It's not been a part of our standard soil test. Maybe it should be. The more I study nutrients, when I study nitrogen, I had an emphasis on weather, water movement through the soil. It controls a lot of what we see as important in terms of nitrogen use efficiency. When in phosphorus, weather perhaps and water transfer through the soil is not that important to crop capture, but it's certainly very important to managing losses of phosphorus. And so we really need to be characterizing our soils for their physical structure, organic matter in that. The chemical part, IPNI has a history of doing soil test summaries, and I'll show you an example as well. We monitor that. That's not all of soil health, but it's an important and essential component. The biological part is very interesting, but I don't think we're close to consensus on what represents what we want and what is desirable for a biological condition of the soil. Yes, maybe more organisms are good, but if they're recycling more things and keeping things more available, we may have higher nutrient loss in more biologically active soils. So we really need to do some thinking on that. I'll give an example of that one as well. This is just to illustrate that the 2015 soil test summary results are just being released. If you drop by our IPNI booth, you'll find some of the information from that. We're starting to quantify our indicators and show, okay, we've got four different summaries where we've used consistent methodology, and you can see here the categories that are under a Bray 15 phosphorus equivalent, all of them have been increasing. 8% of our soils went to a nutrient deficient condition since 2001. Okay, that's not the majority of our soils, but it is interesting that land-grant universities, everyone is on the same page recommending, making recommendations that would actually move those soil test levels up, and they're going the opposite direction. So there's an opportunity there to improve productivity, improve soil health as well. We see a decline in those testing well above the range that is needed for agronomic performance, and that's also a good thing. My next slide deals a little bit with the biological component, and it's a rather innovative approach by a group called the Innovative Farmers of Ontario. They've been talking a lot about soil health and using cover crops to improve the biological activity of their soil, and they were looking for an indicator that would help motivate more people to be more farmers to be interested in improving soil health. So they developed a contest, and it's called the Soil Your Undies to Win contest. The premise here is you take a fresh pair of cotton underwear, bury it in the soil early September, leave it there for 8 weeks, and then you tweet a picture after you've dug it out of the soil. And the concept is these farmers understand higher biological activity means the most rotted piece of cloth, of course, is going to be the winner. Well, my friend Gabe Ferguson, who's worth the environmental branch of the Ontario Ag Ministry, pointed out to me that this was not a metric that would necessarily be suitable for public consumption, because when she explained it to a non-agricultural friend, they thought it was a brilliant idea. Well, the underwear that's in the soil that has the most toxic chemicals used was going to be the one that rotted the most. So anyway, it's important to be, I think, innovative in our use of metrics and communication tools to show what we're doing, but we also need to be very careful. Nutrient use efficiency, my last of the core indicators here. And there we've focused a lot of attention. I think a lot of the people in this room know a lot about nutrient use efficiency. As Rob Norton pointed out, we promote the use of a partial nutrient balance. It's a fairly crude indicator, but at the same time, in terms of system in, system out, it's the simplest and easiest to understand indicator. IPNI has a database, a tool called NUGIS. It illustrates that there's wide spatial variability in our nutrient balances across North America. And if you look across time as well, this is for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium removal to use ratios, you can see again with nitrogen use efficiency, we have the greatest opportunity to improve. We also have factors like price and weather that have caused some wide swings in that removal to use ratio, especially if you compare 2009. Not shown for potassium, just because I didn't have the data organized properly. I'm sorry here. But you can see that high spike is in 2009, where the fertilizer prices were very high relative to the prices that farmers were expecting to receive for their crops. And then 2012, the drought really brought things down as well, and that's the last year in that series. Now some comments on the environmental three: water quality, air quality, and greenhouse gases. A lot of them are difficult, if not impossible, to measure at the farm scale. They are definitely influenced, though, by 4R practices, by agronomic practices, by conservation practices, and then we have other activities of society that contribute to them as well. So just monitoring these things is not enough. We need to find some way to link agricultural activities to understand what our share is in these issues. For water quality, and I need to go a little quick here because I'm running out of time. Nutrient losses from farming, they combine with other sources to impact water quality. We have linkages to other indicators. A lot of risks decline with increasing nutrient use efficiency, but nutrient use efficiency does not solve all our water quality issues either. We look at indicators like the size of the Gulf of Mexico hypoxia. We see we still have an issue relative to the target. It's something we need to be paying attention to. We likely need better modeling tools to understand what are linkages of practices to contributing to that area. When I go to the Western Lake Erie Basin, it's very clear. 2015 is a very embarrassing and difficult. It was difficult data for me to take in, but it's the largest algal bloom ever measured in Lake Erie. It's the largest phosphorus loading during the critical spring period from March through July as well. What was it due to? The Maumee River had record flows in June and July, the fastest, most flow of water ever measured since 1939 when monitoring began. I wouldn't say that practices changed a whole lot between 2012, 2013, 14, and 15, but yet agricultural practices will be under scrutiny because certainly placement of phosphorus fertilizer has an important control of risk of loss of this dissolved form of phosphorus in that watershed. So we need to be paying attention to it. We don't have the models that really accurately quantify what agriculture's contribution is to it. Air quality, I'm going to skim over this one really quickly because with nutrient management, the biggest thing is ammonia, and it could be contributing to PM2.5. Done a little bit of work mapping that in Canada, and I'm sure there are graphs for the U.S. as well, but I haven't gone into depth in that area as well. Greenhouse gases, Allison mentioned that we have been working as well towards defining for our practices that both improve nitrogen use efficiency and control emissions of nitrous oxide. I think we are at a place where we can document some of the 4Rs in terms of sources that control the process of nitrification, and that we can lead to a significant reduction in greenhouse gases. Laura mentioned the greenhouse gas reduction goal. Nitrous oxide is 4% of U.S. total greenhouse gas emissions. That's 4% of the 9% attributed to agriculture, so nitrous oxide is certainly important. We need to be working with it. These greenhouse gas inventory estimates are made with a Tier 3 approach. It's a complex modeling approach, too complex to use at the farm level, so we're trying to work out something that's a little more simple that defines different levels of 4R management and recognizes those who are getting more bushels with fewer nitrous oxide emissions. Food and nutrition security, extremely important, but our direct role in that varies, but it is important. You can see from the FAO data worldwide for developing countries, we're still making slow progress on that, but there are 780 million people still considered undernourished. The interesting thing about this metric is it's not truly a metric of food and nutrition security. The FAO actually calculates it from food production relative to the number of people in a country. And there are metrics that are more directly related to food insecurity. It's not as if it's a total non-issue in the U.S. and Canada. If you ask people if they're food insecure, I'm sure in this room, the answer is going to be about zero. But if we look nationwide, we have to recognize that not everyone is getting fed. And what does that relate to? It's the cheap food we're producing. It's a benefit of crop nutrition as well. And these numbers would be far worse if we didn't have a food stamp program, if we didn't have agriculture that was as productive as it is today. And Sunny Ramaswamy alluded to this as well. We could be very productive in producing the wrong foods. And we have to recognize the role we play in getting the right food for the people in for what society needs. Biodiversity, also very important. We have to recognize our economic value and find better ways of communicating it than I'm doing right now. But I want to just summarize and say, you know, the challenge here with outcome metrics is we need a balanced reflection of our environmental, economic, and social impacts. The what we're exploring is this approach where we have three sets of three. I find it easier to remember. The first set, most directly related to the farm, is productivity, soil health, and nutrient use efficiency. And put those three together, and I think all of our industry can get behind them. The environmental impacts, water, air, and greenhouse gases, and then not forgetting the most distantly linked, but yet the most important indicators, because they're indicators of our benefit to society, food security, biodiversity, economic value. We need, obviously, a lot of this depends on a lot of stakeholder engagement. We need to ensure that we're getting input from consumers and from the public on the priority and relevance of these metrics. We need a lot of engagement within all of agriculture so that we're aligned on our goals for adaptive management. And we need to be engaging the crop, pest, soil, and water conservation practices as well as nutrient stewardship. Any further information you'd like, and eventually this presentation will end up on the website below, ipni.net/4R, more information on nutrient stewardship there. If there's time, Cliff, I'd welcome any questions.
Time for a couple of questions. Thank you, Tom.
We do have microphones for the questions, so we can record them throughout their online delivery of this symposium.
Thank you. I have a question about the Maumee River Basin where the phosphorus loads to Lake Erie occurred. Do you have any data from your soil test database for the soil test values of the Maumee River Basin?
Thanks for that question, Dave. Yes, we do, but it's by state. We don't have it specific for the basin. But if you look at the Ohio soil test distribution, there's not a whole lot in the extremely high end there, and the trends have been fairly steady. About 50% of the soils are in that optimum range recommended by the land-grant university. About a quarter of them are below that range and a quarter are above. That's the approximate picture for the state of Ohio. I believe OSU has done some work as well, getting more specific into that watershed, and their results show essentially the same things in terms of soil test level in the top 8 inches.